Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. Yes, thank you. People are saying that I'm glad that I feel better. I was kind of hoarse the other day. So now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about empathy. Now, we talk about empathy a lot, but let's do it in greater detail so that we can really decide how to teach it, how to do it, and how to teach it, because that's so important. If you teach, if you learn how and you're capable of doing, of having empathy, and you teach other people how, it's more than just a, well, let's do it while we're negotiating these specific issues type things. It is a life changer. It is something that people can use their whole life long for every kind of relationship. And isn't that fabulous? Isn't that something that we'd really like to do? Yes, so let's do it. I'm going to ask kind of a cardinal question. What is empathy and why do we need it? Right? Because we talk about it, but what exactly is it? And this is for us, but it is also to explain to our participants, to other people, so that they understand it too. Yes, this is all true. Thank you all for having listened and liked that, because we say this each time we use the word empathy. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Yes, very important to make that distinction, because people say, oh, we have empathy, it means you agree. No. It means that I understand why you think that. I understand where it's coming from. I don't necessarily agree with you. And also, if I am the leader, I am the third party impartial, and I need empathy for everyone, but really not agreement, because I'm not changing side, I'm not taking a side. I'm not going to say, well, I think this side is better than the other side, right? Yeah. I'm going to be completely neutral and treat everyone equally. Even, well, you know, we are humans. And a lot of times you do have kind of an opinion about which speaker, which side, which idea you think is probably the best one under the circumstances. But we're all going to have to get there as a group. Now, it's good as leader to privately have that thought, because then you know where to kind of lead to, right? Yeah, and kind of work your way towards it. But not to actually voice it, right? Yeah. No, we're not going to take sides. Yes, this is true. To what is empathy and why do we need it? Muhammad says you need to understand your own biases in order to be the third party impartial. Yes, we've got to look deep. Let's think about ourselves as leader under whichever circumstance it is, under these particular circumstances, whichever kind of mediation we're doing, a negotiation, even a seminar workshop, right? With these people in these circumstances, let's think about ourselves, right? Yes. We also need to understand that you don't understand. That's a good point. Yeah, except that's the most complicated. This is a good point, too. Margaret and others are saying that you need to know when you need to call in an expert, Right? Mm-hmm. Need to understand outsiders. This is true too. A lot of people are talking about outsiders and how we need to have some empathy and understanding for them. Even if we think they're really, really, really wrong, we have to know how come they're doing that. Why are they on that side? Right? Let's have some empathy and understanding. Ah, empathy for the employer. Remember that in this show, we call whoever it is that has had the brains to bring us in the employer. It's a generic term. It does not necessarily imply an employment agreement, or even that you're being paid, come to think of it. But we're calling everybody that brought us in the employer, right? Right. It's just that we're using it as a generic term. We have to understand the employer's motivation, right? We have to have some empathy for him, her, them, whatever it is that employed us. Mm-hmm. Yes, and you need to have empathy under the circumstances. Remember that circumstances do change. Mm-hmm. And you need to be flexible. You need to understand going in that sometimes things change, and you need to really be able to accommodate that, to add it into the equation, right? Right, and not freak. Mm-hmm. So now we're going to figure out what we're going to talk about when we decide what is empathy and why do we need it. We're going to talk about it in more depth. And the next topic that we're going to do is how do we teach it? How do we gain it? How do we show people how to gain empathy and really, really sincerely have it, really sincerely understand, have understanding, not necessarily agreement? And how to know when you don't have the understanding, when you really aren't understanding each other. Sometimes you think, I got this. I understand exactly what's going on. And then you do what we're about to talk about. You do the 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why. And you go, holy moly, I didn't understand that at all. I did not understand that that was the motivation. I did not understand that that was the circumstance. I did not understand that's what the employer wanted. I did not understand this at all. Good thing we decided to find out how to teach and gain empathy by asking our 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. So let's get started. Let's talk about each one of these in more depth so that we actually understand what on earth it is that we think we're doing. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's do understanding, not agreement, is the first one, because that was our first one that we decided to talk about. I think this is true. Muhammad says it's a common misconception that you must agree. That is a common misconception. Now, you must reach consensus. You must reach some sort of workable agreement so that you can go forward and get to your successful outcome. But you do not need to agree on everything. Yeah. Who said you need to agree on everything? You do not. You need to be able to get along to reach the successful outcome that you all want, right? And sometimes you might even want it for different reasons. But you have to understand that we need to get along well enough to reach that goal, because we're going to define the goal carefully, right? Yeah. Yeah. As an example, sometimes I use the marijuana trade in the United States, which is in flux again. But you know, marijuana is federally illegal in the United States. Federal law is above every other kind of law. We have a whole ton of laws. We're a society of laws. We've got everything from federal to state to city, to county, to local. There's just a ton of them. And a whole bunch of groups tried to appeal to the proper federal authorities and the Congress people and like that to legalize at least medical marijuana. No dice. Couldn't be done. We had a very liberal administration when a big push was put on. And it's just that there's states in the United States is very big, of course. And we've got a whole bunch of different kinds of opinions in different kinds of states. And, of course, each congressperson is elected by their state. And so they pander to who their voters are. and there's some opposition. There's all kinds of people just like to fight, is what it really is. And but there's lots of really vehement opposition in some states. So the various groups that were trying, kind of on their own, to promote legalization and lobbying for it, which is where you go and talk to Congress people and like that. The various groups had to get together and hatch a plan. It was a very, very unusual and very forward-thinking, out-of-the-box type plan. They decided to put it on the ballot of some liberal states, because states that are considered to be liberal, and get it legalized statewide to kind of make a movement so that the federal government people would go, oh, look at that, that seems okay. The world did not come to an end. And, I don't know, drug addicts are not roaming the streets biting people like in the zombie movie. You think I'm kidding. There's all kinds of opposition, and people said that it was a gateway drug and 43 other things and really thought that zombies would be wandering the streets, yes. But these groups had to get together. They had very little in common except for some animosity having been gained over the years, right? Some really didn't like each other. But they had a defined common goal. Put legalization of marijuana on the state ballot for maybe even a city ballot, but mainly a state ballot, for states' voters to be able to vote on. Would they like it in their state, never mind the federal government, right? Very out-of-the-box thinking, because it's still illegal. The federal government could shut it all down. And so they had to get together and work together. It's hard to get on a ballot. There's a lot of rules. It's not so much cost to get on the ballot, but you've got to have a whole bunch of signatures, a whole bunch of stuff that has to be in at a certain time. And you don't just stick stuff on the ballot. It's a long ballot. You have to have a lot of media and stuff and advertising so people know to vote for it or not. But really, because you want to ask them to vote for it. So they have to know it's there. They have to come out and really do it. Right? Yeah. So a whole bunch of folk, you had leaders who were heads of organizations of different kinds of horrible diseases that would be alleviated, not cured, but the pain, for example, would be alleviated, or the trembles, the shakes, or something, some sort of a bad thing that was happening to people that had this particular affliction. These people had their own organizations. They didn't want to share power. They just wanted to show that they were part of this group asking for legalization because it would enhance their own fiefdom, right? You had to understand that because they were not people that wanted to work together. They just got stuck. But really seriously, they wanted to make sure that they didn't lose their cushy job. Usually these things are well-funded, and they have six-figure salaries. I mean, they're not working as a charitable act. They're working as a professional. There's nothing wrong with that. But what I'm telling you is you had to have empathy for it. You had to have understanding that they didn't want to share, really. They wanted to participate so that they could have a better power base, is what it really was, and get more donations. And their people would be happier with them, and therefore they could keep their fancy schmancy position. Got it? Got it. Yeah. Then you had real ground level. You had growers. You had sellers. You had people who wanted to sell stuff to the growers and sellers. Equipment, I don't know, bags. You know what I mean, stuff. You had the retailers. People who wanted to rent storefronts. And I mean, you had a lot of stuff. I had a lot of different people in the room. And then you had the people that wanted for social good. Those people are fabulous, too. And some of the most hardest working people you ever saw. And it is... And then you had the government, the more local, type government people that had to back it. Yeah. Yeah, we got our state's attorney to back it. It was fabulous because the state's attorney is the person that enforces the laws, really, kind of. Mm-hmm. And then you had to figure out regulations. And then you had to figure out who's going to do it. And then you had to hire people. And then you had to figure out the taxing system because there's a huge amount of tax. And they call it a sin. It's a kind of not actually the official word, but it's a sin tax, S-I-N, because it's like for liquor and cigarettes and marijuana and like that. There's huge tax. Any kind of tobacco, yes. There's a huge amount of tax that the state collects because you want it and they can. So you had to deal with all of these people and get them to have empathy for each other, which is understanding, not necessarily agreement, although they all agreed on the ultimate outcome. And you had to keep pushing them along because there was deadlines to meet, not little fictitious deadlines done by the employer. You need to get it done by this date because they give you a kind of a short deadline so that if you blow it, there's still time, right? No, real deadlines to get on ballots and things and pay for things and like that and submit things. Yeah, so they all had to get along sufficiently to get the job done. Yeah. And when I get one of these types of groups, I always tell them something that surprises them greatly. I don't know why it surprises them. If we all work together and we all have understanding and empathy for each other, the faster we get to our successful outcome, the faster we don't have to talk to each other again. Hot diggity. Yeah. And the reality of it is, it's a surprise to everyone. I don't know why that is. But the reality of it is that the next time some sort of issues come up, these people that were unwilling participants in this group but kind of worked together, they will contact each other again because they will remember that although we haven't really affected their nasty biases, right? Although I still don't like, well, fill in the blank, I can deal with this person from that group. That's all we need, folks. That is all that we need. We need to deal with this person from that group. That's it. Only requirement, right? Yeah. What's to know? Mm-hmm. Actually, there's a lot to know. That's what we're gonna talk about. Mm-hmm. Yes, understanding, not agreement. So you understand now that sometimes people are not being obstinate. They truly believe something. Well, what are we going to do about that? They're not being obstinate. They truly believe something as a fact that we don't think is a fact. We think is an opinion. We think, well, because we don't believe it, we think it's a superstition, a bias. Well, you would never actually call something a superstition because that implies that it's stupid. But we kind of think that, right? We don't have the same belief system. And they don't believe, and they don't think much of us either. Remember that too. Remember that when you have a belief, when somebody has a belief system and you are not part of it, they think that you're stupid too. They think that you're superstitious, that you're, I don't know, a heathen. They think a bad thought about you too, because it's truly belief system, right? Let's think about that. Let's talk about it. Let's think about the fact that we can indeed work together, right? I'm going to call this a cultural difference because a lot of you were talking about cultural differences, and this is what it really boils down to. Somewhere along the line, I developed a belief that this is the way it is done, or, which might even be worse, this is the way it should be done. I developed this belief. We've all got some beliefs like that. I run into it all the time in the smallest ways. It's very, very strange. People get very uptight, kind of instinctively. Do you ever see that? Because, and it's something small, but they get very, oh, no, we can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? Why not? And you know what they say? Yes, thank you. Everybody's chiming in exactly what to say. Because we can't. Well, who made the because? We're going to get down to the 5W questions. And this is what works with this kind of a notion, the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. Let's get to the bottom of that because. Because we can't. Or even better, I know somebody who does this. Everybody knows that, well, fill in the blank, right? Except that not everybody knows that. I know that not everybody knows that because I don't know that to be a fact, to be something that must be done, right? Yeah, everybody doesn't know it. Mm-hmm. In fact, pretty much everybody doesn't know anything. Sometimes this is what I'm going to call a cultural difference. It's something that is kind of ingrained. Your people taught it to you. It's the way it's done, right? You learned it from somebody that you respect, that was taught to you. It's a cultural bias, a cultural difference. And you need, as a reasonable person, you need to think it through, right? Is this really true? Oh, we don't worry about all the world forever and ever. How about if it's true in this specific instance with this specific participant? That's it. Just this specific instance with this specific participant. Yeah. Well, you got to think that through, is it? Probably no. This person is different. That's the best we can do sometimes. I can deal with him or her because they are not like the others. How's that for an idea? I can deal with him or her because they are not like the others. Now, that allows you to keep your unreasonable bias intact. We might not be able to change that, but we do need to be changing the way that we work together because we're going to need consensus, and we're going to need a workable outcome. I don't think a thing is successful as an outcome if it's not workable. You need to be able to do it. You need to be able to work on your own. You need to be able to forge into the future, right? Yeah. It's not a successful outcome if it doesn't get done what it's supposed to get done. Mm-hmm. And then there's other kinds of cultural differences. Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of you have seen this. I've seen this lots. There's cultural difference, and there's cultural kind of ingrained behavior. But it might not be your family culture where you came from. It could be your corporate culture, your business culture. I see this a lot. Now, it is true that those who thrive the best in strict corporate cultures, the corporate culture kind of melds, kind of jives with their ethnic culture, with their core beliefs and how things should be done, right? But you have to acknowledge it. You have to know about it. Yeah, I like to ask. I like to be told. I like to know how things are done when I'm dealing with a new organization. I like to know who's in charge and how much reporting they like. Yeah? How do we get flexibility? how do we get more funding if we're going to need more funding? Sometimes we do. Sometimes it's a surprise, but we need more funding. How do we get more time, right? I want to know who's in charge and whether or not they're going to back me up. Because if they aren't going to back you up as a leader under corporate culture, run. Yeah, because you won't be able to get the result that you need. And it's going to hurt your reputation, and it's not going to be because you were dumb. It's because you entered into a corporate culture that looked like they wanted this result, but they did not. Yes, that happens a lot. Run. Do not. All right, we might as well talk about the civility rules right here and now. The civility rules, for those of you who are new, and welcome everybody, and thank you for all of your participation. We want to find this word, recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The civility rules are the only rules that Recipe for Peace Now has. They say at their core, we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other under any circumstances. Mm-hmm. We will not make faces, make comments, grab somebody else's turn to speak. I don't know, sigh, heave, send texts that are rude and cause other people to giggle. It's the equivalent of passing notes in class nowadays. I actually will confiscate your electronic device. I call it a phone, but it's kind of more than that. Yes, I will confiscate whatever it is you're using to text with. But I will warn you first. The civility rules are important. They make a convivial atmosphere. If you've got someone who is habitually attempting to thwart the civility rules, which must be announced, right, because how are people going to know, and then enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly, you're going to need the backing of the employer to enforce the civility rules if someone's refusing. You can say them, but it's just words. There has to be a consequence. I deal a lot of corporate. I like a consequence that impacts your employment. Sometimes, in fact, frequently, I have groups that are not exactly there willingly in the beginning, although they get there. They are a certain level in employment. And that level needs to know something, needs to be able to do something, needs to be able to negotiate some sort of an outcome, some sort of rule change, for example. And if you don't cooperate, I want to be able to say you can't participate, which means that you're going down a level in employment. Now that is a way to enforce something, right? Yeah, because it affects your pocketbook. It affects your prestige. It affects your lots of things, right? Yeah. And so it's important to have an employer who will back you, who understands that sometimes it takes more money and more time than we thought, although I like to estimate big if anybody asks me for an estimate. And I need it in writing. Because sometimes people nod your head and say, sure, at you. But when it comes down to it, they won't back you. I want to know what my powers are in order to enforce the civility rules, in order to say, no, you cannot do that because it is uncivil. And this is what happens if things are uncivil, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. I'm looking at this because I'm thinking about it. And it goes to our own bias and also to understanding, not necessarily agreement. It goes to any kind of bias, our own, our participants, outsiders, whoever. The bias makes a difference if it is learned, as in you think it's really a fact because everybody knows. Well, everybody knows within your cultural parameters, right? Everybody you know knows. Everybody you like knows. Everybody you trust knows, whatever it is. doesn't make it a fact, or a bias that has been created through personal experience, that this don't work, that these people can't get along, personal experience. That does make a difference, too. People are asking which one's harder to break. I think it just depends on the person. And remember, our job is to not really make them better people at their core. Our job is to be able to make them successful at reaching a workable outcome on the issues at hand. Right? Yeah. So they may not change their core heartfelt ideas, but they will be able to work with these people at this time for these issues to get to our successful outcome. Right? Right. This is true, too, when we're talking about understanding, not agreement. Lee says that sometimes you have a surprise understanding that's outside your experience and creates a new perspective. I love that. Yes. A surprise understanding that's outside your experience and creates a new perspective. I never thought of that. I didn't know that I didn't understand because I didn't know to ask the question. So far out of the loop. Yeah. I didn't know that I didn't know so that I would know. Yeah? Yeah. So sometimes if you are getting empathy and you're trying to find out stuff and you're trying to avoid differences so we can get together and make this workable, sometimes you find out a surprise understanding that's outside your experience. Yeah. Something that we hadn't considered because nobody thought about it. Nobody mentioned it because I've never seen it before, right? Yeah. I actually have this sometime with technology, right? Yeah. Because technology moves fast. And I use what I use, but sometimes it can be done a better way. Excuse me, took a sip of water. And sometimes, I like to understand what's happening, what the technology is, and what they're doing. Because sometimes it's not a better way, it's just a more complicated way. And that's not an improvement. So you have to find that out too, right? Yeah. But yeah, sometimes outside your experience, you go, wow, really? Cool. Yes. People are talking about our biases as leader and talking about being a model of civility. Yes, we must be. We must be a model of civility. We cannot ask people to do something that we do not do. We cannot raise our voice, get nasty, get insulting. I don't know, do something gross that's unleadership-like and I would not be proud to see, right? No, we are models of civility, models of getting this done, right? Models of digging deep beyond our own bias, because we have some too, right? Our own preconceptions, and getting down to where everything is reasonable. Everything is true in the sense that it is workable. Right? Yeah. Yes. Yeah, you need to understand yourself is what it really is. And one of the ways to do that, we just talked about getting a nice surprise and understanding that's outside our experience and perspective. Sometimes it's not such a nice surprise, come to think of it. I always find it fascinating, but sometimes it's something that means that we are going in the wrong direction. This is not the path. And we need to be able to acknowledge that, right? Yeah. Yes, thank you. This is our next topic. That's understand that you don't understand. Understand that you don't understand. Suki is talking about a comfort zone. This is true. A comfort zone is the way things have always been done. We kind of like them. The way things have always been done. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. We don't have to invent a new way of thinking. We don't have to be too imaginative. It's not going to take too much time. This is how it's supposed to be done, because this is how we've always had done it. Let's think about that for a moment. Well, maybe, but maybe not. Let's look outside our comfort zone and see what's out there. See if maybe, I'm not disputing that that's how it's always been done, but maybe that's how we got into these issues in the first place. Because how it's always been done, not so good anymore. It's really what we need, right? Yeah. And that's the ticket to it. It needs to be really thought about and understood that it is something that needs perspective, right? Sometimes you need to understand that it needs research. Let's have our teams do that. It needs research. We haven't quite got the modern take on it, and sometimes that is the problem. Things have changed, and that we haven't watched. We haven't been vigilant. And things have changed, and we're like, "Oh my, really?" And the answer is yes, really. Things have changed, right? And that needs research. Sometimes you need to understand that you, as leader, need a mentor. You need to consult with somebody. You need an expert, but more than an expert, a mentor. An expert usually, in my opinion, someone who is called in for a specific topic because they have some knowledge about it. It might be that they actually failed and they're still interested in seeing success. I don't know what the knowledge is, but they have knowledge. A mentor is somebody who takes an interest in you. It has an opinion about the trajectory of what you're doing, right? Unlike an expert who's just brought in for a specific question. So how about we understand that we could use a mentor if we can find one? I don't like the ones that, well, I don't know that I don't like them. See, that was a bias. Ordinarily, I am cautious about the ones that are assigned. You could luck out. I am cautious because it has been my personal experience that the ones who are assigned to you, they don't know you very well. And it's a duty that they will do it perfunctorily. I like to see if I can find someone to truly be a mentor, truly be a support. Understand that you need an expert, right? The next thing we need to understand. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you're not sure of what the figures mean, for example. I like to have more than one expert. I kind of like them to be of different opinions and using different research and like that to see if they agree. And if not, how come? I like all kinds of opinions, all kinds of experts. Because I really, really, really don't like the law of unintended consequences, which states that if you do something, there will be unintended consequences that you didn't think about because there's always the ripple effect, right? Let's go for outsider empathy. Oops, we may run out of time for the recipes. Let's see if we can get them in. So we've talked so far about empathy within our group, essentially speaking, with the employer, with the participants, with experts and like that. So let's think about the other, the outsider, the people who aren't actually in their group, right? What should we do with them? Oh, thank you. Yes. Thomas and others say that you should invite them into the group. You should invite them to participate, right? What if they don't want to? What if they say, well, I will help you because I have a new, unique perspective for some reason. You need me. but I don't want to be named. I don't want to be involved. I don't want anybody to know that I helped you. This is what Reverence B for Peace Now calls the invisible participant. If you agree to keep someone anonymous, you must keep that promise, right? Even if things get a little sticky. You must keep the promise of being anonymous or your reputation will be not good, right? Yeah, not good. Because people have entrusted you with their identity, with their lives maybe, with their livelihood, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, we like to invite the invisible participants into the loop if they can, right? If they cannot, well, let's go talk to them. Let's have them talk to us. Let's see what it is that they have to say that we don't realize, that we don't actually do, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the next one up? The circumstances are causing friction with outsiders, right? Mm-hmm. People asking why people want to be anonymous. Let's go back a second. The answer is oftentimes because they are in a present position of importance, their job, whatever it is, might be a politician, for example. A lot of folks don't want to be named while change is in the process just in case it doesn't work out, right? Sometimes that happens. And they don't want to have been a rebel. They don't want to have been a revolutionary. They want to just sit quietly in the background and keep their head down. But they've got some sort of information or some sort of an opinion, some sort of a unintended consequence result type information that they feel you really would like to know. And you know what? They're right. You would really, 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 really like to know it. And they say, don't tell anyone I told you this. Promise you won't tell. You make that promise, you don't tell, right? Other outsider empathy. A lot of folks are talking about circumstances changing. Remember, we need to have some flexibility. Sometimes circumstances do just change. They might change. Well, oftentimes they change not so much for the better. Some sort of funding, for example, is common, right? Sometimes the employer changes. Someone is no longer with the firm, for example. Or they get promoted, demoted, whatever, but they're no longer in charge. And you have to explain to somebody else why this is important. And they got to understand. They have to be sympathetic. Sometimes things just change. Outside things change. An invention, for example, a finding of some sort of a cure, which would be a good thing some sort of a reason. Federal law changes and marijuana becomes legal. Yay! That kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You also need to know about outsider empathy. You have to think about it because you have to know about the power play. People don't want to lose face. They like their position, and they don't want somebody to come around and kind of muddy the water, right? Kind of create friction. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about empathy for the employer, and then we'll go on to how to teach it. Oops, we're going to run out of time. Remember that our employer, which is a generic term, right? Everybody's on board with this. Doesn't necessarily mean really our employer. Yeah, there's some people that came in late probably after I said this. But we'll use employer as a generic term, being whoever it is that had the brains to bring us in. That's what we call employer on this show. Mm-hmm. The first thing that you need to do to have empathy and understanding with the employer is you need to define success. What does success look like? Let's define it. Let's find out what it is that you want. What do you expect to get from this negotiation? What's the ultimate outcome? that you'd like to see, right? Yeah. So you need to define success, and you need for everybody to understand that that definition is flexible, right? Yeah, because you finally get them to say what they want, and then you have to say, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of flexibility because this is real life, not the movies, and things happen. Now, we're not going to fail, but we may need more time, for example, more steps. We may need more money. We may, and then they say, how long do you think it should take, right? Now, how much do you think it should cost? Because that's a good question. Pardon me, took a sip of water. And my personal advice, yeah, is to figure big, because it will enhance your reputation when you come in under budget and under time. Yeah, figure big so that you've got some leeway, so that you don't have to keep coming back and saying, oh, we didn't quite make it. We need more time and we need more money. Right? Yeah, my advice is to, I always try to figure big on these things. And, well, to a certain extent, you know about how much and how long from experience. If you don't have that experience, you might consult with an expert. You might actually ask around and see what people think. Mm-hmm. Employers need to also understand that circumstances change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The main thing I like to do with the employer, and you have to make this as a judgment call, because some employers want to micromanage, which may or may not be Americanism, but it means that they want to really, really pick the details. They want to really be involved and make rules and requirements and get a lot of reports and things. They really, really, they want to participate and complain from a distance. I've reached a time in my career where I don't have to deal with the really bad ones. But I explain that I know what I'm doing. I will report in, not every second of every moment of every day. They're not my only client, right? And if they really want to know what's going on, come on over and participate, right? Yeah, be part of the group. Come, then you'll know. Then you'll have your own opinions, right? You're more than welcome to come. Now, when you say you're more than welcome to come, you have to think about that in advance, right? And whether or not that's true. But I think if you can possibly help it, you should try to deal with employers, because you will get a reputation in the community for excellence, who you can invite into the talk. You can say, come on, let's really deal with each other. Let's talk about this. Let's participate, right? Yeah. Because the employer's not anonymous usually. They can see the participants. It will inherently enforce the civility rule, something fierce too. Mm-hmm. So we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's talk about how to teach and acquire this empathy. How are we going to do it on a practical basis? Because it's nice to talk about, but what are we actually going to do? Yes, exactly. A lot of you, we've talked about this. You know, prior shows are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes. Hopefully they're all there. It's been a lot of years, so there's a zillion of them. But they've all got a title, and you should be able to scroll through. We're going to use the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, why? We're going to use these questions because we're going to find stuff out. When we find stuff out, then we'll be able to understand. And we'll go, oh, my, really? Now I understand that. Yeah, good. 5W questions. Who told you? Who knows? How about who else thinks this? Who else is in your camp? Oh, but yes, people are asking how they are asked. Along the way is the answer. Now, can you ask them all one after another? Maybe. But you don't want to look like an interrogation. They are willing participants, even if they're kind of not volunteers. But we need everybody to feel welcomed and respected is the key to this. So you don't do it like an interrogation room. You kind of bring them out into the conversation. And everyone participates, unless you've got somebody who's truly kind of out there and you need to talk to them a little bit privately, like maybe one of the food breaks, right? Or, yeah, one of the little potty breaks and like that, so that we can, or maybe we need to actually call a meeting. But somewhere along the line, you want to know the answers to these things. And you are teaching your participants to take this valuable lesson with them so that they may understand other people in their lives, right? Right, like spouses and children. Who told you? Who told you? Who knows? Who thinks this? Right? Mm-hmm. Yes. Who do you respect is an interesting idea, because who told you is the person that you value their opinion, right? Mm-hmm. Who else do you value the opinion of? What? Who, what, where, when, and why? What? What was said? What do you know specifics? Do you know specific applications? Was an example given, right? What was the source of the information? Right? And if they don't know, they could find out, right, from the who that told them. Especially what was the source? How did we come to this conclusion? Where? Who, what, where, when, and why? Where? Where did you hear it? Who said it? Who said what and where, right? Here's a very important question. It goes to source, right, which you're already looking for. Where did they hear it? Right? Who, what, where? Where did the who? What were the circumstances where they heard it? Yeah. Who, what, where, when? When did you learn it? When was it told to you? Another question is, was it told to you, right? That's not one of the was isn't exactly, but it goes to when. Was it told to you, or did you overhear it? Is it a rule of some sort, right? Or did you overhear a conversation? Sometimes the source is somebody somewhere said it in a bathroom. Gee willikers. That's, well, let's try to find a better source and see if it's true, right? How long ago? When was it? How long ago? When was it repeated? Is it recent or historical? Sometimes even corporate culture and stuff is historical. It may be written down someplace, it may be given lip service, but it doesn't have modern-day application so much. Do you understand that? Yeah, we've always done it that way, but over the years, we've kind of had to modify because we don't want to go out of business. And the same with a lot of things. We've always done it that way, except when... who, what, where, when, except when, well, fill in the blank, this circumstance happens, except when we need to, right, when we need to modify. You'd be surprised how flexible when is, right? Sometimes we need to go to the who to find out what we can modify when we cite the rules when we think about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, whatever the question is, it's been hanging around for a while. And we all know the modern world changes quite swiftly. And maybe technology I'm talking about, but just in general, it's somewhat because of technology, because we can really find out about each other instantly, which is really fascinating and really helps the who, what, where, when, and why. So we're on to why. Why did you have this reaction? You said in a very polite manner, right? Why do they, that's the who and the what, and maybe where you heard it, why do they want this result? Yeah, why is this the conclusion? Why is this the outcome that's being promoted? Mm-hmm. What kind of agenda does someone have? So that we can understand it, right? Is there an agenda? Mm-hmm. Why do they still think that, even though this has happened, right? Yeah, because sometimes something pretty big time has happened that should have changed course, should have changed opinion, but it kind of didn't. We might think about who they would respect to influence their opinion about what and where and why they're going to change their mind, right? Yeah. A lot of times I bring in somebody who we can all agree in is a respected person who has modified the prior comfort zone, the prior bias, right? Yeah. You don't even have to physically bring them, as in, you know, come to our meeting. The internet exists, right? Yeah. If they're still alive, how about Skype, right? Yeah. And so these are ways to teach how to find out our understanding, right? Yes. And my friends, yes, we are out of time. We will do the recipes next time, hopefully. A lot of times we run out of time because we have such interesting discussions. And I know a lot of you like the recipe, but kind of the discussion is the main part, right? Right, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you want... My goodness, my voice is going. Hang on one second. Goodness. My goodness, that proves it's a live show, eh? thank you for being here. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Prior shows are archived on the website, which is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. You can also connect with us through the website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.